Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have a delicious, well, we'll have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, the last five, the most recent radio shows, are actually archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com, and the rest of them, including the last five, all the shows, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Okay, thanks. Now let's get started. Now, this show, we're going to talk about asking questions. And of course, when we do a mediation, we do a seminar, we do a talk, we get together a community of people, of course, we are asking questions and listening carefully to the answers. But the key to this is, what is the preliminary question that we're going to ask when we start, and how should it be phrased? What should our starting question be when we have a group that we're getting together? What should we ask them first so that we can get ourselves on the right track, so that we can get ourselves on the path to success? Oh, thank you. I see that we have lots of participation already. Thank you all for coming. And let's see. Now, this is an interesting point. Yes, Ari says that the first question is everyone comfortable and do you have enough to eat? You know, that's a good point. That it's a host question, isn't it? It's a convivial atmosphere question. It is, well, how are we doing? Is everybody settled in, so to speak? Is everybody comfortable, and do you have enough to eat? That's a really good point. Yes, I think that probably is our preliminary question. And, you know, people are saying that the thing they start out with is not a question. Thank you, Ari, and thank you, May, and other people. And the topic that they start with is not really a question. Well, it kind of is. It's a who are you question. They go around the room. In fact, I do this too. And I do it even if we kind of know each other, if we haven't seen each other in a while. And we go around the room, around the circle, around the group, and we say, tell us who you are. And a little bit about yourself or why you're here. You see, the why are you here question is always an interesting preliminary question. Because, first of all, you might or might not have everyone remember everybody's name. And I see that people are saying that they use name tags. Yes, that is certainly a good idea. Sometimes a group really doesn't want to wear name tags or people object to it. I personally think name tags are a good thing. But I don't mind wearing one, but some people do object. You have to see. And if it's a group where we should all really know each other, name tags might be overkill. It might not be something that you want. It depends. Oh, look, I said it depends. You guys always say I say that a lot. Yes, it depends on the makeup of the group and how well you know each other and how often you have met. But it's interesting to go around and say, even if you're not introducing yourselves anymore, because in the ongoing process you have talked before and we all know what your name is and there's no one new to the group. See, we do that when there's someone new to the group too, so that they know who everyone is. But it's also interesting to just find out how you're doing if you haven't seen each other in a little while. How are you? You know, have you brought anything specific to say? Is anything new? You see, that's interesting, and everybody likes to know. And it's part of the networking, part of the convivial atmosphere that we're going to create. Yes, that's a wonderful, those are wonderful preliminary let's get started questions. Are you comfortable, and who are you? Those are, and how are you doing? Those are wonderful preliminary questions, aren't they? Thank you, everyone, for all your participation. I see we have lots of people. Thank you very much for those who are returning. Thank you to the new people. Welcome to everyone. And now, so after we've gotten done with those questions, which are, of course, our opening ones, very, very nicely done, and I like to do that kind of a, well, you know, there's, I know this is a global show, and it's kind of an American expression, but you know what break the ice means? And people are giving me a why for yes. Break the ice means that just kind of get the conversation flowing and kind of, you know, nod at each other and say hello. And it's a friendly thing to do. It's a hospitable thing to do. So now, you know, several people have said that the next thing that they do to get the conversation going, to get the issues into discussion, is that they say, and Mesa, she says, what is your opinion of a specific topic? Or have you thought about it? And do you have anything to add? And they go around the table, around the group like that. Do you have anything to add? What is your opinion? Have you thought on the topic, especially if you are returning? You see, the first time that you get together, you can say, what is your opinion of a specific topic, right? And we want to make, of course, the specific topic rather narrow, or else we're going to get a speech from everyone. And, well, that's not discussing, right? That's taking the floor and really emoting. And that's not our goal. We want to have a discussion with all included. So what is your opinion of a very specific topic might be an interesting opening question. So we know basically where people stand, right where we start out. And then after we've been going for a while, you might ask the other what is your opinion question, right? And people are telling me that the next thing that they ask is, have you thought about the issues? And what are you bringing to the table now? People are going, that's another idiom. Yes, it is. And I apologize. It's another United States idiom. This is true. Bringing to the table, not in the sense of we're sitting around a table, but what have you come to discuss? What have you decided in the intervening time since we've seen you last? What's your opinion on the topics that we talked about last time? And what conclusions have you thought about? Have you done any research? See, I see people saying that. Have you done any research? What is your research report? You see, a lot of times, if there are complex issues, and I know a lot of you are saying that it depends if it's a subcommittee. A lot of you have groups that are very large, and over the process, you have divided into subcommittees to research a specific topic. And so that would be an opening question too, wouldn't it? A lot of people are telling me that they use an opening question as to what did your research discover? What are you bringing us? What's your report? You see, that's a really good way to open too after we get through with the pleasantries. And you say, well, make your report as to what your research topic was. What did you find out? You see, those are all excellent questions. And Helen and other people are telling me that one of the things you should ask is, how do you feel about this issue? You see, that gets people's opinions out into the open. Not just what is your research, what are the facts, but how do you feel about this issue? And again, I would say that the key to doing that is to make the conversation step by step, the issues, the topics, very specific, so that you don't have general overall speeches that impede conversation rather than promote it. How do you feel? What is your finding? You see, those are all interesting preliminary questions, which will get us going, right? Get us started on our discussion. How do you feel? And Pramada says that as a preliminary question, she says that even if you have met before, you can have people say, you can ask, tell us something new about yourself. See, she says the first one is to tell us about yourself when you first get there. But now you can say, tell us something new that's happened to you. Tell us something new about yourself. An interesting point. And, you know, this is all goes to how do you feel about this issue. Belinda says one of the preliminary questions is, does anyone have special expertise in this area? Now, that's a very interesting question. Does anyone have special expertise in this area? That's an interesting thing to know. You have an issue that has some sort of a procedure that needs to be done, some sort of a regulation that needs to be talked about, some sort of a scientific issue. Does anyone have any expertise, a legal issue, a medical issue, something that someone might have expertise in? Yes. And this is an interesting point. This is kind of a broad question, but it's an interesting one that Hinto and others have been bringing out. A lot of you start the conversation, or at least in the beginning of the conversation, maybe not the first words that you say, but as preliminary topics, you say, how should we define our goals? How should we define our goals? Now, that's an interesting topic, and we've talked about this in prior shows too. By the way, prior shows are all, the last five are on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com, and all of the shows, including the last five, are on the radio station, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. So anyway, we've talked about that in the past. How should we define our goals? That's a very broad question if the issues are multiple and fairly complex. You see, sometimes that is not a bad question because the group, whoever it is that you're dealing with, basically is similar and they know that they're working in the same direction. There's not too much contention in the group. It's just a question of how to achieve something. You see, they're basically in agreement, but they need to work together to achieve a change in the law, whatever it is that we're doing. So how to achieve it? How should we define our goals? If that is a question that can be reasonably answered within this lifetime, no, within a reasonable amount of time without getting the process bogged down, that's marvelous. In fact, I have actually, and people are actually telling me this, that thank you all for your participation. I just love having you. And Hinto and others are telling me that they actually they write it down. They use a blackboard. They use a whiteboard, one of those things with the markers. They use a PowerPoint. They use something where they have it written out, and so that you can see what you've decided, and they even put the goals down, and then they define the goals, and that's a very good idea. And yes, it is very helpful if it is reasonable to do that, given the group, the multitude of issues, and their complexity, and whether a goal can be reasonably defined right now and not later. In fact, your goal might change as you go on. And Rosemary says that the question is, what does a successful outcome look like? What does successful outcome look like? That's basically defining goals, right? What's our goal? What's our outcome? What should it look like? What should it be? So it's kind of, sometimes that's very difficult to do and it will bog down the process to put it on paper. But if you can, that is a very good thing because you can have it before you. And it leads you, keeps you focused, keeps the group focused. So I think, given all of your answers and our discussion, that we can say that the idea is to ask open-ended questions, right? Because if you don't ask open-ended questions, you're going to get a yes or no answer. And that's no way to hold a discussion. And yeah, George says if you don't use open-ended questions, then that's the end of the discussion. You're absolutely right. Because you want to ask questions where there can be a diversity of opinion and we can reach a conclusion. And there's no reaching a conclusion if you're not going to be able to have a discussion. So it's really the quality of the question that determines the direction of the discussion. And artist says it's the quality, yes. And, you know, a lot of you are saying this, artists and Caroline and George and others, and it's easier, the old expression is easier said than done. Caroline says that you keep asking the next logical question in order to move the process forward. Yes, you keep asking the most logical question. You make a progression of the questions. And since we are oftentimes the host, we can rather steer the discussion, steer the conversation towards focus by using judicial asking of questions. You keep going. You keep asking the next logical one step by step. And which has led to quite a few people asking this question, which is a very good, and an open-ended one, a very good question. I'm going to paraphrase it. People are asking, how do you know what to ask next? See? That's the trick. Because, of course, we would like, thank you very much, Caroline and others, we would like to make a step-by-step progression that leads us forward. But the question is, how do you know which is the next question to ask? And, you know, Kyle and Andrew and others are saying that if you're going to use step-by-step, that it's important to, pardon me, to think logically, and oftentimes you can always use a what if question for the next one so that we can make a logical progression and think about alternatives and choose the correct one. What if we did this? What, you see, what if explores the different scenarios, the different possibilities. And that is a way to make the next logical step to narrow the issues. Because sometimes we have very, very broad issues, but we need to decide what we're going to do about it. What, in a practical manner, what are we going to do? And what if this happened? What if we did this? You see, it's that will narrow the issues and allow us to focus on what we need to do. And oftentimes the what if questions are the next logical progression, you're right, to getting towards success, towards reaching a conclusion, towards reaching a consensus, you see? And, you know, Daniel and others and Jacqueline are making a very good point that you can't just ask a what-if question. This is absolutely true. You can't just say what-if just out of the blue. That it's Daniel says that it's important that the what-if be a reasonable possibility or it's just a waste of time on hypotheticals. Must be a reasonable possibility or it's just a waste of time on hypotheticals. You know, this is a very good point. You don't want to just talk about something that you can't possibly do because of economics, because of constraints. There could be a whole bunch of reasons why a what-if scenario is not reasonable. There's no sense in considering it because you can't do it. There's no way to logically or reasonably accomplish it, and we need to look for a better what if that we can do and agree upon. Mm-hmm. Now, this has led to quite a few people. Connie and others are making a good point. Connie especially has made a very good point. She says that sometimes, you see, You don't realize that it's unreasonable until you work it through. That's a very good point. And you know that, and that's absolutely true, and I didn't think to say that. Thank you very much for mentioning it. Thank you, Connie. And everybody else who chimed in with that. Yes, we're saying that the what if needs to be reasonable, but sometimes unless you work it through, you work the hypothetical through, you don't realize that it's unreasonable, and you go, oh my, we're going to eliminate that as an option. We're going to eliminate it. That doesn't work. We will seek a different way. We will agree upon a different way. We will agree that that doesn't work. You see, that is also very important because it tells you what's extraneous, what you're not going to focus on, because we have to focus on what we can do. Mm-hmm. So we're going to ask our own what-if question because I see that a lot of people are asking it. And people are asking, thank you for your participation, what if we've reached an impasse or reached an unsuccessful result? What if it's gone bad? What if, we'll use our own hypothetical, huh? We'll ask an open-ended question. What if it's not working? What if we've got an impasse? And Grace says that when that happens, the question that you ask the group, that you question you ask the participants is, how can we learn from the experience and go forward? What a nice way of putting it. How can we learn from the experience and go forward? We've taken a wrong turn. We've reached a conclusion that's unreasonable. We kind of stuck. Question is, how can we learn from the experience and go forward? And Rachel says that none of that's a disaster. It's just a direction change. Yes, that's exactly. When you reach an impasse, you try for a different what-if scenario. That's when you call the timeout, right? And you think on it for a minute and think about how to get towards consensus again. You've fallen a wee bit off the path. It's not going too well. That's why Recipe for Peace now advocates the use of the food, right? It's not because we're hungry. Oh, it's not because we're having dinner, really. It's because in every human interaction, really, but especially in a negotiation, a seminar, a workshop, some sort of a community get-together, whatever it is we're doing that we're using mediation principles, there comes a point where people don't want to compromise and they need a timeout. And if you make the timeout just to leave or to make a phone call or to do, no, you want to keep them in the room. You want to give them something convivial to do so they talk to each other and take 3 deep breaths and think, well, my first reaction was no, I won't go towards the middle, compromise, reach consensus. But then they think about it and they talk it over with themselves, they talk it over with the other people in the room, you're all having a nice bite to eat, gives you a moment to think about, well, maybe I could move a little bit. If that person would move a little bit towards me, I could move a little bit towards them, you see? Then you come back and you start discussing it again. See, that's the trick. The food is a diversion, so to speak. You see, and I'm with Rachel. When you hit an impasse or you make an unsuccessful turn, it's not a disaster, it's just a direction change. Mm-hmm. You betcha. You know, several people have mentioned that negative experience help us grow, and maybe they might even help us grow. If we have a negative experience, And we next time, and hopefully with the same people as part of the process, and next time we will try to avoid whatever happened, help us grow, and maybe even help us help others. What a good idea. And Carol says that stops and starts are part of the process. Yes, that's absolutely true. I've been doing this for a real long time, and stops and starts are just natural. And that's why we have the timeouts, and that's why we try to make an atmosphere where we can negotiate with each other without stopping and, okay, without the stops and starts being jerking, to make it more smooth, to make the process more smooth. And you know what, and Kevin says that when you get into kind of an impasse or an unsuccessful area, he says it's a way for the group to redefine their goals and redefine what is success. Yeah, that's what politicians do all the time, isn't it? Thank you, Kevin. Yes, it's absolutely true. You know, sometimes success and your goals might not be solving the whole thing, especially like in one sitting. It's an ongoing process. So your goal might be in several increments, in several sections. You might implement your success, you might implement your goal in a series instead of all at once. And it's a way for the group to redefine goals and redefine what is success. Good point, Kevin. And now, okay, we're getting a lot of the how question, right? We've done the what if question, and now we're going to answer the how question, as in, how do we do that? How do we reach our group? How do we keep them focused? How do we keep the answers in a logical order? And, you know, this is an interesting point. You know, David says that we can, how can we petition? Sometimes if you've got something like a law that you wish to change, he says that you have to look to the regulations and how to properly petition. And how it's a logistical question, the how. And yes, some part of the how is often a logistical question. What do we need to do to effectuate this change in a practical matter? And also, we've got a lot of people, Jim and others have said that the question can be stated in a positive manner to elicit an enthusiastic response. That's how we can get people to go forward. The questions are stated in an enthusiastic manner, in a positive manner, to elicit an enthusiastic response. He gives an example that is, what should we do to make this work? What should we do to make this work? That's an interesting point, because that's a positive way of doing it. Not saying, why won't this work? What should we do to make this work? And Amy says in one of the questions could be, how can we graphically show our positive results? How can we show our positive results to others or to show what we've been doing? You see, those are all good questions on how to move the process forward. And sometimes it is true. You know, as you proceed, what you thought was going to be the solution oftentimes is not. You reach a different one, or you reach a compromise on the solution. And oftentimes success gets redefined. That what we did when we reached an accommodation, when we reached a consensus, this is all successes. There's more than one. Yeah, people are saying there's more than one success in the process. Absolutely true. There are a series of successes, just as there are a series of steps. And sometimes there's a couple of, well, not successes. we won't exactly call them failures, but there is sometimes an issue needs to be gotten back to. We need to have some success under our belt and some agreement before we can reach a very, for example, contentious issue. We need to kind of work on it and make our way step by step. And, you know, it's an interesting, quite a few people, Debbie and others, are saying that they hold a more formal get-together and that, pardon me, and that sometimes what I would call an executive board, the officers get together and actually put out a series of questions, rather like a survey, to ask people their opinions outside of the group and then rather tabulate them so that everyone has an idea of where you stand, an idea of how it's going, of what your opinions are. Mm-hmm. And Jennifer says that one of the, and also you have like a secretary, somebody who's willing to draft a petition, for example. There's always, but there's usually one person in the group who's particularly well organized for actually putting the thoughts together in writing and drafting a petition or drafting whatever it is that you need to do. And Jennifer says that one of the best questions to use is, what are you looking forward to? See, that's a positive question. What are you looking forward to? How can you define success? And I kind of, well, you know, in order to make the process go, sometimes you have to ask this question. And Debbie and Marla and others have said, shall we have a time out to consider the propositions on the table? Yeah, that's a lot of times you need to do that. Shall we have a time out to consider the propositions on the table? And, of course, when we have a time out, and look, we've segued right into that. Thank you. And thank you very much for doing that. And oftentimes when we have a time out, of course, we advocate keeping everybody there and not letting them kind of, leave and come back later and talk to people on the phone who give them bad ideas that they need to push. And like that, we're going to create a convivial atmosphere so that everyone will wish to stay and talk to each other outside of the formal process. And that, my friends, is where the food comes in. And I know that all of you, those of you who have been here before have heard me say this, but I say it each time, and yes, some of you are starting to send in the word label. Yes, I'm going to. It's very, very important whenever you have a gathering that's going to have some food that you need to label the contents of the dishes. Not just what they are, the name of the dish, but really label what is in it, really list it. Because people have religious prohibitions to certain foods, allergic prohibitions, allergic reactions, or dietary restrictions. And you will email everyone, call them, whatever process you're using, and ask if anybody has any kind of a restriction on what they can eat. And you will, of course, tell everyone and accommodate it. But even so, you will have everyone, you warn them ahead of time, label every, say what is in every dish, just in case someone can't eat it. You don't want them to have a bad time. You don't want people to get panicky or offended or sick, for heaven's sakes. You need to label what is in, tell what is in all of the dishes that we're going to eat so that people can make a decision as to whether or not they can. Now, we have reached the recipe portion of our show. Yes, thank you very much. And a lot of people ask me about vegetarian recipes. And so our safe recipe will be a vegetarian, not a vegan, but a vegetarian recipe. And what makes something a safe recipe? Well, we are going to label it anyway, but it is something that has ingredients that are not too exotic, And, you know, I'm in the United States, and your exotic may be my commonplace, so you have to decide. And generally speaking, has ingredients that most people can eat, that it would be somewhat unusual not to be able to. Although this one has cheese, and people sometimes are indeed, cannot eat cheese, they are lactose intolerant. So this is going to be the safe recipe. It's a cheese and spinach pasta bake. And, of course, if you're making for a big group, you make several pans worth. And this is the kind of a thing that you can indeed cover and refrigerate it for about a day without it losing any of its quality. But more than that, I don't like to keep things too long because they change a little in quality, and I for sure don't want them to get strange and make anybody sick. So here we go. Cheese and spinach pasta bake. We're going to get a pound of macaroni-type pasta, the kind that's round, not a fettuccine or spaghetti-type pasta, and we're going to cook it al dente, and we're going to drain it. We're going to get 3/4 pound of spinach, 2 tablespoons of butter, a large onion we're going to finely chop, 6 cloves of garlic sliced. People say I use a lot of garlic in my recipes. If you think that's true, then for heaven's sakes, use less than 6. I like garlic. We're going to take 1 nice lemon, and we're going to juice it, and then we're going to save the skin also because we're going to zest it. I suppose we could zest it first and then juice it, so just grab the lemon. About 1/2 cup of vegetable broth, 1 teaspoon of salt, 16 ounces a pound of mozzarella cheese that we're going to make into little pieces. We're going to cube it, and about 1/2 cup of grated Parmesan cheese. So we're going to preheat our oven to 350, and we're going to grease a baking pan with the olive oil. We're going to make it smooth. I like about a 9x13 baking dish for this, and you can make more than one if you've got a lot of people coming. But this will make quite a nice portion, and you can serve it with a spoon, and people don't really take huge amounts. I like to have extra. So we've preheated the oven. We've greased the baking pan. We're going to wash and dry the spinach. All right, you know, in secret, right? I have no secrets from you, my friends. In secret, yes, people are going, can you use frozen? Yes, in fact, I probably really kind of would. If you're going to use frozen, you must defrost it, and you must dry it out. You must give it a good, dry it on paper towels, whatever it is you're going to dry it on, but don't let it go in wet or icy. It has to be like fresh. And we're going to slice the spinach up into ribbons. Even the frozen kind, you need to kind of slice it so that it's not clumps of spinach. You need to be sure and defrost it and drain it. And if you've washed spinach that is fresh spinach, be sure and drain that too. So we've got the spinach all cut up. We've got the pan greased. We've got the oven on. We're going to heat the butter in a large skillet. We're going to add the onion, and we're going to do it until it's soft. We're going to cook until it's translucent, about 10 minutes. We're going to add the garlic, and we're going to do the same thing. We're going to cook the garlic until it's nice and soft and everything smells fantastic. Then we're going to add our greens to the olive oil and the onions and the garlic. We're going to squeeze our lemon, and we're going to add our vegetable broth, and we're going to toss the, you've got the spinach and everything, especially if it's fresh, you need to toss it around so that it's all incorporated and goes down into the pan, gets kind of wilted. And we're going to take our lemon also, and we're going to squeeze it in, and we're going to zest it all the way on. We all know to zest is to take the outside off the lemon with one of those little, what do they call them? Thank you. Somebody went microplane. Yes, with one of those microplanes. So we're going to zest the lemon and squeeze it. And then we're going to take this whole thing and we're going to put it in to the pasta. We're going to stir it all around and we're going to put it in the baking dish. So we have incorporated our spinach and our onion and our garlic and our oil and our pasta. It's now in the baking dish. We're going to take our little cubes of mozzarella. And we're going to put it all over the top because it's going to be nice and cheesy on the top. If you want, this is the point where you stick it in the refrigerator for up to 24 hours. I never like to keep anything longer than that. It will get funny. But this can be kept, you can make it like the night before and keep it in the fridge just like this with the cubes of pasta, of mozzarella on the top. But we're going to keep going. So we're also going to spread the Parmesan on the top along with the mozzarella, so we have lots of nice cheese. And we're going to bake it uncovered for about 30 minutes until it's all nicely brown and bubbly and yummy. And that's it. In fact, if you have cooking facilities wherever it is that the meeting is being held, you can take this. Well, it's not raw, right, because you've cooked the pasta, you've cooked the onions, the garlic, the spinach, and the cheese is on top. You can take it ready to put into an oven with you and bake it right there. I advocate this, if it is possible, because it makes the room smell fantastic. Everybody will want to eat it more than they can possibly say. It's going to be incredibly yummy, and it is good for the group, and everybody, you know, is going to smell it and go, wow, that smells delicious. And it's just a nice thing. It always makes for a more convivial atmosphere if it smells wonderful. So we are going to, if we can, take it with us. But if not, of course, we could rewarm it. And those of you who have been here before, and most of you have, thank you again for coming. I always advocate letting everything, when you take it out of the oven, if it's possible, to put it to the side and let it stand for about 5 minutes, because that will make it set better when people put a spoon in it. It will just—it's just a way of making it a little more beautiful on the plate, a little more solid. So that's our safe recipe. It is safe because it is basically vegetarian. It is vegetarian. Not vegan, but vegetarian. The ingredients are fairly obvious. You can pretty much see what's in there. We're going to list them anyway. And most people are not allergic, have a religious or dietary prohibition, unless to the maybe a dietary to the pasta, but you can see it. So it is my safe recipe. And it's extremely popular. And you can put a spoon in it, and it's very nice for serving. Now, this is going to be our adventure recipe for this evening. And it's a sausage fusilli. Now, I have said to get fusilli pasta for this because it is what it usually looks like, I think. I suppose because I usually use fusilli pasta. But it is not necessary. You know, fusilli is big corkscrews of pasta. Pardon me. You can use pasta tubes and other things like that. People asking me what kind of pasta. Whatever it is that you like. I think rotini is the smaller little corkscrews. Whatever pasta is available to you that is not a long, thin one. Could it be used with a long, thin one? Well, of course, but it won't look as nice. And it won't incorporate as well. So I think it should have some sort of a tube-type pasta. Mm-hmm. So here we go. This one is our adventure recipe. Why? Because it has sausage. And sausage is pork. And sausage is something that a lot of people don't eat. So you have to know your group. You have to have asked. Religions don't eat pork. Other types of dietary prohibitions, and really you can see the sausage. And if you're like me, I mean, I know a lot of you make a lot of things because people are always asking me about changing things around and what's in the sausage. I must confess that generally speaking, I buy the sausage. I don't really make it. And you have an idea that it is, of course, a pork sausage. Yes, you can use chicken sausage or anything else you'd like, but it's our adventure recipe because although you can basically see the ingredients, it's something that a lot of people don't eat, so you have to know. So here we go. We're going to have a pound of pork sausages. I like the not too thick ones, the ones that are kind of the size of a thick hot dog. Yes, like a, well, people are saying not worse. Well, yeah, kind of a regular hot dog. I like them spicy. You don't like spicy, get non-spicy or medium or whatever kind you like. But make it a firm sausage because we, and not too huge of one, because what we're going to do is we're going, in fact, quite a, I said hot dog size. You all know what hot dog size is, right? Yes. And it's because we're going to broil them and then cut them into chunks. And if you have something really thick, it won't cut into chunks. You're going to have thick slices, and it won't look the same. If you have that and you really would like to use it, cook it thoroughly, grill it, and then cut it like into cubes, cut it into chunks, sideways and across, not just sliced down. So whatever size you'd like. About a pound of that. 2 tablespoons of olive oil, a nice onion that we're going to finely chop, 2 garlic cloves crushed, a large yellow pepper. I like red ones too. In fact, we're going to have 1 yellow one and 1 red one. And we're going to seed them, take out the membrane, and cut it in, them into strips. 1 teaspoon of paprika. A 16-ounce can of tomatoes. The non-whole ones are fine. The chopped ones, yeah. So in my part of the woods, cans are easy to come by of tomatoes. If you'd like to use fresh, of course, feel free to do it. 1 cup of vegetable stock. 2.5 cups of dried fusilli that, of course, we're going to cook al dente and drain. And some salt and pepper. So first we're going to grill the sausage. Well, actually, first we cooked the pasta, right? And we cooked it al dente and we drained it. We're now going to cook our sausages for however long it takes for them to grill and brown on all sides. What, about 10 minutes or so? And we're going to put them on a paper towel or something that will cause them to cool off and drain, because we don't want this dish to be greasy. We're going to try to get rid of some of the sausage fat. While they're doing that, we're going to heat the oil in a big pan, add the onion and the garlic, and we're going to do our usual. We're going to make them smell wonderful and somewhat translucent, about 5 minutes maybe less. We're going to add the peppers, the paprika, and we're going to cook it about 5 minutes more so that the peppers are incorporated but not squishy. We're going to pour in the tomatoes, and we're going to break them up with a wooden spoon. Yes, we are not going to use the juice. We're going to drain the juice out of the tomatoes. We're going to pour in the put in the tomatoes, and we're going to stir all of that really well and cook it for about 15 minutes as we gradually add the vegetable stock. So now we've really got a tomato sauce going, right? Because we've got the tomatoes, the peppers, the onions, the garlic, and we've added the vegetable stock kind of gradually and stirred it all around. And we've cooked it for about 15 minutes and reduced it down. Yum. Now, while that's reducing down and we're cooking it, we're going to take our lovely drained and cooked sausages, and we're going to cut them into nice pieces. I'm going to call them chunks, but nice bite-sized pieces. You can't really call them cubed because they're round, right? Yes. So nice bite-sized diagonal-type pieces so it looks pretty. We're going to take those lovely pieces of sausage that already been cooked for, that we've already cooked, and we're going to add them to our, well, we're going to call it a tomato sauce, to our sauce. And we're going to mix it well. And everything's going to be hot because the sauce has been cooking for about 15 minutes. And we've incorporated the sausages, which have cooled down, and now we're making them hot again. We have a marvelous sauce. We have the peppers in it. We have the sausage in it. We have everything. The next thing to do is we're going to put the pasta in it, right? We've cooked it, and we have drained it well. The pasta goes in. We stir it all around without breaking up the pasta. We fold it, I think, which is what we call it. Yes, people are agreeing. Well, all right. People say you fold with a spatula and you stir with a spoon. Well, go figure. I usually use a wooden spoon for the whole thing. And so you incorporate it all together, and there you've got it. You've got a delightful dish. It is our adventure recipe because it's got the sausage. But it's popular. If you want to make it for more people. Of course, you make a bigger batch. Yes, people are asking about all kinds of ingredients. You can add whatever it is that you would like to it. Just remember that whatever you add should not be wet because it will ruin the consistency of the broth, of the sauce. You want to drain whatever it is, if it's tofu, if it's meat instead of the sausage, whatever it is that you would, people asking about chicken, whatever it is that you would like to add, do so, but remember that it needs to be cooked thoroughly, and it needs to be dried off so that it doesn't add excess grease or excess moisture or whatever it is that the excess would be. Yes. So, we've now had our two recipes. We've talked about asking questions. And I believe, thank you, my friends, for being here. I believe we have come to the end of another one of our shows. Thank you very much for listening. If you'd like to find us, we are at recipeforpeacenow.com. Send us an email. We are at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The last 5 episodes, including this one, the most recent, are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the episodes, including this one and the other 4, the last 5, are archived at the radio station, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you very much for being here. Thank you for listening. I always learn something, and I hope you did too. And please come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.